Chris?
Yes.
Hey, how you doing? It's Sam from the Just Talk with Sam podcast. How are you?
Good, man. How are you today?
Man, I am great. Once again, before we even start, I just want to say thank you for just calling into the podcast, giving us a little bit of your time, man. Thank you so much.
No problem. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Man, I gotta say, it was hard to like come up with an interview because you are hands down one of my favorite wrestlers of all time. And so I kind of like, while researching and doing stuff, I kind of had to, separate my fandom from the actual questions. So,
okay. Well, thanks.
Well, the reason we're having this is because in a few weeks, you guys will be here in the Detroit metropolitan area with Ring of Honor, the Wars of War tour, that May 9th.
Right.
And I gotta say, man, while researching, I was looking into your journey into professional wrestling, and you didn't exactly have the traditional amateur wrestling, football, athletic background. It was like you was an actor. How did you get started in wrestling?
Well, I played sports as a kid, but nothing like took my time or took my life. Like, you know, like Kurt Angle was an amateur wrestler, like his whole, you know, high school, college, that sort of thing. So I played soccer. I wrestled for 1 year in junior high, but nothing really, nothing that I sort of kept from, you know, school through college and beyond. But I did get into acting late in high school, and I decided that was going to be my focus for my degree. So my degree was in theater, and after I graduated college, I moved to Chicago with my girlfriend, who's now my wife, and while we were up there trying to break into the theater scene, I would always joke with her and just say, you know, this acting thing doesn't work out, I could always be a pro wrestler, ha ha ha. And, you know, because I was a fan growing up, but, you know, at that point I sort of thought, oh, I'll never be big enough to be a pro wrestler, so that's a pipe dream. So, anyway, we were living in Chicago, the Chicago area at the time. She found out about a school called Windy City Pro Wrestling.
A lot of people came from there.
Yeah, it was a good school, man. It was a good school when it was around. And so I had an opportunity to interview with the guy that ran it. His name was Sam DeCiro. And my wife said when I came out of there, it was like I was hypnotized. Like I had a new vision in my eyes. So, you know, at that point, the acting thing wasn't really super successful for me. And so I decided to sort of put it on hold and see what the wrestling game held for me. And so I started training in January of 1993. And about 3 months later, I had my first match. And from there, I just, you know, that's where you learn the majority of your craft is, like, working in front of live audiences. And so that was the beginning of where we are today.
Hey, man, that was probably one of the best decisions you ever made. I'm not knocking your acting, but, dude, I mean, you're on a stage where thousands upon thousands of people see you weekly. So, I mean, good decision.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not disappointed the way it turned out. I wouldn't change anything, so I'm happy with it.
Okay. One thing I wanted to touch on, just very, I don't want to spend a lot of time on this, is your time in TNA, because personally, that's where I learned of you, you know? And I would like to say, how would you categorize your experience there? Would it be professional or personal fulfillment?
Well, I would, honestly, like you said, that's where you first learned of me. That's where a lot of the world first learned about me. I mean, you know, for whatever negative connotation that TNA has, the truth is, like, more people know me from my TNA years than anything. And so, and honestly, I wrestled some of the best matches of my career there, and, you know, probably the best years of my career in terms of my in-ring output were there. And so I can't look down on the experience itself. Certainly the friendships that I made and the experiences that I got in terms of working with, you know, guys like Kurt Angle and Christian and Kevin Nash, you know, and then the stuff that I did with AJ and Samoa Joe and tagging with Frankie and, you know, just the gamut of my time there. It was an overall positive experience. I mean, you know, I wouldn't say anything bad about the talent. There's not one person that I ever wrestled in TNA that I would have a bad word to say about. You know, those guys went through the trenches with me, and even the guys that are there now that are, you know, whatever's happening with them, if they're struggling to stay alive or whatnot, the talent is carrying it on their back. And, you know, I've got nothing but good things to say about the guys that I ever wrestled in the TNA ring with.
I mean, like, you're right. You had some legendary feuds and some good... one, I think, that, like, really made me pay attention is your tag team and feud with Elix Skipper. Yeah, that's where I really started paying attention. But, like, you did mention your guys like AJ, Samoa Joe, I mean, they're killing it right now in NXT and WWE. Any thoughts? You still keep in touch? What are your thoughts on that? I think Joe just won the title.
I'm thrilled for him. Yeah, I try to keep in touch with him. I just recently congratulated Joe when he won the NXT title. I try and keep in touch with AJ, especially now. You know, talking to him about the stuff that he's getting. I get a chance to see his matches now every week, so I get a chance to touch base with him and say, hey, this looked good, and this was good, this worked, that sort of thing. And, you know, I'm just happy, man. I feel like I'm glad that the perception of guys from TNA changed in terms of, like, the WWE. It seemed like for a short period of time, like, if you had a background that included TNA, they didn't really want to give you the time of day. And I can understand that. You know, my perception of the mentality was that they didn't want to, you know, sort of shine a light on a company that was conceivably their competitor. But you know, I feel like now they've sort of softened that mentality, and I feel like Joe was one the guy that sort of you know, broke the ice in that respect, and they gave him the opportunity. You know, they let him keep his name. They built him up as a big deal, and then they gave him the ball, and they let him run with it. And like you said, like, his success in this last year has proved that was a good decision. And I think that sort of opened the door for guys like Austin Aries and even AJ, even though he didn't go to NXT directly. You know, I feel like that certainly had a play in the fact that those guys are there now.
Okay, and yeah, I mean, I would imagine there's nothing but love with these guys. One thing I did want to touch.
Absolutely.
One thing.
My best friends, so I'm thrilled that they're there.
That's how you do it, man. One thing I do want to touch on is, honestly, your gimmick when you were there in TNA, like the Fallen Angel. That was it. I mean, it still is. One thing I read, maybe you could clear this up, mainly because it's you. It said the Fallen Angel was loosely inspired by Goldust, but just with religion.
Right, yeah, like the mentality was, you know, I started calling myself the Fallen Angel early on, but not in the sense of a character, it was just a nickname. And then I experienced watching Dustin do Goldust at the very beginning, where, you know, he had this character that it didn't matter if you were, you know, white or black, rich or poor. You know, everybody has a sense of their own sexuality, a strong sense of it. And so he pushed buttons with that character. And so I looked at that and I thought, well, what other topics could I touch on that might push those same type of buttons across the board? And the answer I came up with was religion. So I came up with this idea, like the character was inspired by Goldust, but I mean, it was loosely based on David Koresh, like the idea of a guy who fancied himself a leader of men and, you know, thought that he was God's gift, you know, a speaker for God or an angel from God. And so I wanted to play with the idea of a guy that had a God complex and thought that God chose him and that was sort of the mentality going forward. Visually, it was an easy sort of character to play. You know, you throw the priest robe on and the hand symbols, and I certainly didn't play with a lot of the things that I saw growing up in the Catholic Church. Visually, it was easy to sort of portray, and it immediately got a reaction being seen. The difficulty that I had was, once I started talking and doing the promos in that character, I found out that even though I was trying to be controversial without being offensive, a lot of places didn't really want to push the envelope in that respect. And so there was not a lot of pushback, but I just felt like I never really got in the groove that I think I could have done the most with that particular character. And it never fit 100%. Like I said, I had a lot of great years with it. And on the Independence team, where I didn't have to worry about a character specifically, the name and the look was enough. But, you know, when I got to TNA and went full bore, especially when I went into the program that I did with Sting, I started to realize that I wasn't going to be able to go full bore with it. And, it wasn't soon after that that I sort of stopped doing that version of the character.
All right. Well, I mean, it worked out, and I guess it did what it was supposed to do. But you mentioned this earlier, like when you got there with Frankie Kazarian. Like right now, you are killing it in ROH as the Addiction. I mean, what do you have to say? If you're doing great there, they have an amazing tag team roster in ROH. You guys are still just dominating. What do you got to say about the tag team roster in ROH?
I was just doing another interview a couple minutes ago, and I told him that I don't know if there's been a time in Ring of Honor's history or in pro wrestling where there's been a company that has such a crowded tag team division. And we were going over the names. You know, you look at the Young Bucks and Red Dragon and Roppongi Vice and the Briscoes and the All Night Express and War Machine and the Motor City Machine Gun. Like, I don't know if there's ever been a time where you've had so much championship caliber talented teams in the same company vying for one set of championships. And so, like, for us to not just succeed there, but thrive there and do well there, it means a lot to me because, you know, every one of those teams that I just mentioned, and even ones if I've missed any, we're all vying to be the best and put that best foot forward. And, there's, for some of us, it's friendly competition, and some of us, it's outright, cutthroat, get there before the other guy. But either way, we're all trying to be at the top and say that we're the best in that company. And for Frankie and I to be able to say that, especially after a combined 41 years experience between us, that means a lot. You know, it drives me at this point in my career to try and be as good as these guys that, you know, anywhere from 10 to, 15 years younger than me. And, I'm just proud of the things that we've done as a team. And that's our main focus right now, is to be the best in the most crowded tag team scene there is.
I mean, like, right now you're exclusive with ROH. I mean, we talked about the tag team roster, which is it seems like a great fit because let's not sleep on their singles roster. Like, you're in there with guys like Adam Cole, Jay Lethal, and some of the new favorites, my son's favorite, Moose, and Dalton Castle. I mean, what do you have to say about their singles division?
I feel like one of the main things about Ring of Honor that's always been true throughout the 14 years is that there are guys that are hungry to make an impression on the wrestling scene. For a lot of these guys, it's their first opportunity at, national exposure. And so when you get that opportunity to get on that stage where the nation is watching you, you absolutely put your A game on display. And guys like Moose, guys like Dalton Castle, I'll mention guys like ACH and Silas Young. In addition to Adam and Jay and Jay Briscoe and Mark Briscoe, like all of these guys, they're top notch. And I mean, you know, the last couple of years, especially since Sinclair has, you know, acquired Ring of Honor and put a lot of focus into the television show, you know, we just recently in the last 2 years started doing live pay-per-view events instead of the iPay-per-views. You know, we've done nothing but try to put the best wrestling on the planet in a wrestling ring and on television for people to see. And every one of us on that roster are, like I said, putting our best foot forward and showing the world that we are the best. So, yeah, man, I mean, single, tag team, Ring of Honor's got it covered.
I mean, like, and you would know, man, because you've been wrestling a long time. According to Steve Corino, you've been there since the late 60s.
Yeah, that's about right. It was actually 1958, but, you know, Steve doesn't always get a chance to do his homework before he gets to the table.
Yes.
You know, he's at the bar up until the last minute.
Okay, but like you're in there with guys 5, maybe 10 years your junior, and you're still going strong. I gotta know, what are you using? What are you eating? What special sauce are you? Do you have to just defy time?
Nick Fury sent me a vial of the Infinity Formula way back in the day, and I've been rationing that out for the past couple of years.
That's smart.
So I'm gonna keep it close to the vest, though. I don't want the signal.
That's rude.
I don't want the secret getting out. So.
I mean, that's smart. I mean, like, I did my homework. Sir, you were on the first Ring of Honor pay-per-view. Now you are, like, right now in Ring of Honor. Do you, like, any thoughts on how much Ring of Honor has grown through the years?
It's just awesome, man. I mean, like, for example, I was in Ring of Honor. The last time I was in Ring of Honor before this was 2010. And I was the television champion. We were on HDNet. And we ended the run on HDNet, and there was a period of time where we were sort of in limbo. And this was right around the time that Sinclair bought the company. And so, you know, contractually, I had to go back to TNA. At that point, I lost the TV title, and I left. And at that point, guys like, you know, Kyle O'Reilly and Adam Cole and the Bravado brothers, these guys were in the first, you know, first, second match on the show. And, you know, they were just starting to get a television show syndicated. I come back in 2014, and find out that Adam Cole, you know, you find Adam Cole 3 years later has become world champion. You find Kyle O'Reilly, one half of the tag team champions with Bobby Fish as Red Dragon. And not just world champions, but guys that are spoken of in terms of the best in the world. And, in addition to that, the entire company, the guys, you know, some of the guys that I was familiar with and some guys that I met that day, were all going forward to participate in the first live broadcast pay-per-view in Ring of Honor's history in 3 years. So, I mean, that all that work that those guys did to get from a brand-new show on Sinclair to a broadcast pay-per-view, that was all on all of those guys. The Briscoes, Jay Lethal, Kevin Steen at that point was still there. You know, all these guys. And so, like, just that period of growth when I wasn't even there is astonishing. And now, since I've been back, you know, you look at guys like Jay Lethal, who had such an incredible run as TV champion to become the world champion, and now is, like, one of the most dominant world champions on the scene. It's amazing. And, you know, like I said, every one of those guys on that roster is out there showing the world that Ring of Honor is a force to be reckoned with in pro wrestling.
I mean, like, since you've been back, I've heard the term where people talk about you as more of a locker room leader. Do you want to kind of touch on some of the stuff you do for Ring of Honor behind the scenes?
Sure. I mean, I just recently, like you said, I signed exclusively with Ring of Honor, and part of that contract, it requires me to, nothing specific. I mean, it's not like I've got a specific title like agent or producer or anything, but basically I help out where I can. You know, I help out creatively where I can. I put my 2 cents in, I give my opinions, and, you know, my voice is heard. As far as the talent in the back, you know, I try and take my time with everybody and watch as much of this stuff as I can and give my opinions on what I think is going to get the best performance out of each wrestler, whether it's character-based or athletics-based or, verbal, physical, whatever. I'm trying to eliminate the negatives and accentuate the positives on each performer, each wrestler that works for Ring of Honor. And, it's such a wide gamut of things that I do, whether it's just commenting on the way a person carries himself or the way a guy does a promo or his timing in the ring or his footwork. Like, all of these little things that don't necessarily come to mind when you think about what you're watching. But, it's the little things that sometimes that polish sort of shines up extra nice once you get it down. It becomes almost an unconscious thing, like you don't know you're seeing an improved performer, but you just see it and you feel it, you know what I mean? So, I mean, that's sort of the job now for me is to, just keep an eye on everything and improve it as best I can. Use whatever experience I have and, give my opinions where they're needed and where they're wanted and try to help guys out, try to, sort of tighten up everybody's presentation.
I mean, that's awesome what you're doing for the guys. I kind of want to shift gears a little bit. Once again, you have been revel as a major comic book lover. I think this is where the only thing where me and you have a lot in common. You recently just wrote your own comic with you and Kaz versus pretty much all the stars of All Yeah. Like, you beat up Action Cat.
It was a pretty even fight. I mean, he got me some as well. Not everybody knows that's a true story. It's actually the time where we wrestled a bear, a cat, and a bug. It was actually Ernie the Cat Lad, Grizzly Smith, and Beetlejuice in a six-man tag, but we just adapted for comic book form. I've known Art Balthazar and Franco, the guys behind All Yeah Comics, 2011, and they gave me the opportunity to write this story, I wrote the story and they gave me the opportunity to have it printed through their stuff. And since then it's just been a great experience to be able to say that I wrote the comic book. And that comic book is currently available at Ring of Honor event where we're going to be. And hopefully soon it's going to be available on allnorthwestwrestling.com as well. If it's not already, it's on its way to be. And I also recently wrote the sequel to it. And I'm just waiting for Art Balthazar and Franco to give the go-ahead on the art. So it's just a matter of time before the sequel makes its way, not just to Ring of Honor events, but also the comic shops around the U.S.
Well, that's not your only step in the comics. You were a part of Headlocked, weren't you, with Mike Kingston?
Yeah. I've also been a big fan of Mike's stuff since Headlocked started. And in the last couple of years, his Kickstarters for his trade paperback, I've tried to be a part of. I donated a story, or I wrote a story, to one of his trade paperbacks. In addition to guys like Frankie and Samoa Joe and the Young Bucks and MVP, AJ Styles did one. We're all big fans of Mike's stuff. I'm a big fan of the story itself. And it definitely speaks to me, and I think it's a very realistic portrayal of a guy trying to make it in the world of pro wrestling. Okay. So, I've always been happy to sort of put that out there and promote the book and help Mike out as much as possible.
Okay, and lately you are a major part of From Parts Unknown. That's Jeff Williams.
It's a very eclectic group of guys. I know Joe Keating is involved. There's some Hollywood writers that are also involved. And they asked me to be a part of it as well. And I don't want to go too deep into it. It's sort of a surprise, but as a professional wrestler, my viewpoint towards the craft of pro wrestling and how you learn to be a professional wrestler, that's sort of what my story is going to focus on. And I know that the Kickstarter is in full play. So if you go to my Twitter, which is @FACDaniels, I'll be tweeting about it and trying to promote that Kickstarter. And I encourage everybody listening to do the same. I think it's going to be a great project. I think you're going to see a lot of different viewpoints from a lot of varied individuals who are talking about their love of professional wrestling. And I think if you're a professional wrestling fan, it's interesting to see where everybody stands on pro wrestling. You know, whether you're, like I said earlier, whether you're black or white, rich or poor, young or old, you know, pro wrestling has touched a lot of people, and it's interesting to see what brought people to pro wrestling, what keeps them engaged and emotionally invested in pro wrestling. And I think that's what From Parts Unknown is going to touch upon, from a bunch of different various viewpoints.
Okay. I can't wait to see it. I got a few more questions. We're just going to speed round this. Thank you so much for your time already. But let's just go speed round. Like right now, you're playing Deacon at Waterworld, in the Waterworld show at Universal, right?
Yes.
How has wrestling prepared you for this?
Just performing. Wrestling didn't specifically prepare me for it. I mean, really, my like I said earlier, my degree is in acting. So, like this doing this show was sort of second nature to me. But because it's a stunt show and there's stunt work involved, athletically speaking, the wrestling part of it sort of prepared me for that. And it's an opportunity to sort of flex different muscles that I haven't done in a while. I'm getting an opportunity to work with a lot of great stunt coordinators and stunt performers. And because I live in Southern California, I hope that this opens doors for me to do stunt work in other things, whether it's television or film. And, just something else that I'd like to do with my life while I'm still enjoying a pretty successful wrestling career.
Okay. All right, Chris, this may be the most important question I ask you all day.
All right, I'm ready. I'm standing up now.
Have you heard from Curry Man?
I actually know that Curry Man is working in a Kinko's in Morioka, Japan. I think he told me he just got a raise. He may have been promoted to assistant manager. I credit him for his work ethic because I know that Morioka frequently runs out of paper, the whole city. It's very weird, but I'm proud of him. Assistant manager at Kinko's is an important position, and so I'm happy for him. I haven't talked to him in a while, but he sends me wacky texts. I don't think his English is that good yet, and I think his phone plan is very weak because sometimes his texts sort of cut out in the middle of the word. So, but other than that, I think he's doing well, and so good for him.
Maybe we could see him in ROH. Maybe a little mass versus mass with Mr. Wrestling 3. Maybe.
I don't know. That would depend on Ring of Honor. I know that he made an appearance in January at an event, and I don't think he embarrassed himself. I'm pretty sure he cleaned up himself in the locker room. I don't think he vomited on the floor in the locker room. I don't think he was drunk when he wrestled. So, you know, all of those things point to perhaps being able to return. You have to talk to Ring of Honor about that, though, man.
Okay. And last question. How do you make the perfect apple teeny?
Two parts apple, one part teeny, and three fingers of love.
That's all we can ask. Thank you, Matt. I look forward to seeing you here in Detroit when you guys stop through, man. Anything you're looking forward to since you're coming to the Motor City?
The fans in Detroit have always been great. Actually, this is going to be Dearborn, but I mean, that whole area has always been great for us in terms of Ring of Honor, whether we've been in Kalamazoo or Dearborn or Detroit proper. The Michigan fans are awesome, and I think you guys are going to enjoy the show as well May 9th. In Dearborn. I'm not sure what's happening with us yet, but just stay tuned to ROHWrestling.com to see all the latest and greatest announcements about the show. And remember, in addition to the ROH guys, you're going to be seeing the New Japan stars as well. So it's going to be a special treat for the Dearborn fans. So put it on your calendar now, everybody. May 9th.
All right, well, Chris, thank you so much for calling in. One more time, get that Twitter out there. I want my fans to... What's your Twitter?
All right, it's at FACDaniels, F-A-C-H-Daniels. stands for Fallen Angel Christopher. So FAC Daniel, that's my one-stop shopping in terms of, like, internet. I do Instagram, I do Facebook a little bit, but Twitter's where my main focus. So if you want to know what's going on, follow me there. I'll keep you updated on my schedule, the next comic book coming out, what I eat for lunch sometimes I'll talk about. Who knows what I'll talk about? 140 characters or less, I'll get it done. So follow me.
Okay, thanks, Chris, and thank you so much for giving me a piece of your time.
No worries, man. Thanks very much, and thanks to the fans for listening. I appreciate your support.
All right, man. Can't wait to see you on the 9th.
All right, take care.
All right, bye.